Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Rad Gontos. Wake up, you're on.
Wake up, you're on? Wake up, you're on. Okay, Daddy. No, it's funny. I've been listening. We've been doing this for 2 years, and I stopped listening to the intro. Okay, I stopped listening to what actually was being read, and I listened to it, and it says life's challenges, right?
Yeah.
And for those who joined us on Facebook Live here a few minutes ago, we have challenges in the studio all the time.
We do.
And so today, hand that to me, will you, Paul? Today we had the camera
freeze up
on us. This is what we usually use for our camera to do the YouTube feed. So, if you're looking at me on Facebook, that's my cell phone there, and I'm going to give a plug to Samsung Note 5 right there. So Samsung, come out with the Note 8. I need it real bad. But Samsung Note 5, I don't do Apple, no. And it's working really good for us, and there's a battery pack, and so we adjusted, you know. That's Gen Xers, I guess.
You know,
we adjust to the circumstances.
I know we wander here, but I'm going to have to get you to switch back to Apple this coming fall. Why? You didn't read the email I sent to all our shows.
Oh, I read the email.
Apple may do what they have never done. Apple created podcasting by accident when they said, "Hey, you want to record something? We'll put it on the iTunes platform, and we'll call it a podcast, I guess, here." And since then, they don't go to any podcast forums. They don't promote it. They don't give you any numbers. They do nothing. They just distribute these shows.
Cut down to the chase. The reason why change to Apple is because?
Because now they've announced quietly at their new Apple conference that they may, for the first time in the new version of iOS 11, give us podcasters some real data on who's listening. Wow. What a radical thing. Since 2005, they haven't. Now they're talking about actually tracking how long people listen.
And let's explain this to people, okay? I get the question all the time.
Who listens?
How many people listen to your show? I actually got it this week from Susan Piperi at SeniorServe. She's
right.
Like, well, you know, whenever I talk to people, they ask me how many audience do you have, right? And so it's really difficult for us to tell. The only way, to be honest, and I'm pleasantly here to report, is the only way we know how many people potentially could be listening to us is if we look at how many times a particular thing has been downloaded.
Right.
Or in real life, when we go onto Facebook Live, for example, how many people watch us.
Yeah.
And so last time we did a live stream where it was me and Paul was in the hot seat here. We had something like 500 viewers in a period of 48 hours.
Yeah.
Right? So it is a very powerful bit of information that would be very handy, in not the least of which, if we had that, we could tell people, look, this is the audience we can deliver.
Well, just to go
on
a little
topics and, you know, how people respond to topics.
Let me go a little
topics.
Geeky for Susan or anybody else thinking of sponsoring any of our shows, including this one. Here's the problem. When Apple created this in 2005, it was by accident, not by design. So they've never really embraced it or done much with it. Unlike YouTube, they don't take the podcast. We have to store them somewhere else in a server and feed them to them in what's called an RSS feed. What does that mean? The place you store them is where it collects the data of how many people listening. And from the beginning, the only metric they've used is the old-fashioned one, download. In the beginning, you had to download it onto your iPod in order to play it. There was no bandwidth. You couldn't stream anything. They've stuck with that idea. And what it means is, let's say typically our shows get 1,000, couple thousand downloads an episode, according to that metric. Does that mean that 1,000 people...
By the way, I just figured out how I'm going to tie this into the show.
Okay. Does that mean that 1,000 people downloaded an episode and played it? Think about this. So let's say Rod got 1,000 downloads for this episode in the next month. Does that mean 1,000 people? Or does that mean one guy downloaded it 1,000 times? Could be. And it's also even crazier because the downloads are tracked by IP address.
Right.
What if somebody was listening from, pick a big company here, Broadcom?
Yep. You don't know where.
I know is one IP address downloaded a show. It could be 1,000 people listened to it within that IP address.
So what you're saying is that even in the case of Apple,
right?
Okay, sometimes the technology and the way that things are done becomes obsolete, but we still continue to go down that path.
Exactly.
Right? And in anybody who has ever worked for a split second in any kind of corporate America, unless it's a startup of some sorts, we could probably tell you story after story of how just the way we have done it for the last 20 years is the same way we still do it until something happens.
Right.
Until something either unless you get some sort of disruptor, you get some sort of pushback, you get some sort of really devastating way, like with the Exxon Valdez situation, you know, where something catastrophic happens.
Something big happens.
That causes you to actually say, wait a minute, we need to review it. Which is crazy, right? Because we consider ourselves one of the most innovative countries, leaders, thought provokers, you know, especially in California, trailblazers in technology. And yet, even in the case of Apple, 12 years we've been doing the same thing all over and over again. Well, right. It is.
Nobody downloads a podcast anymore. You stream it like you stream a YouTube video. You go and it just streams.
So here's the thing that I don't know a lot of people have been listening to the show. Maybe you've picked up on it, maybe you have not. But Paul challenges me.
All the time.
All the time. About how the heck are you going to tie whatever, because we do this rift every time, right? How are you going to tie this to what it is we're going to talk about? Well, it's perfect. Thank you for teeing me up, right?
Can't wait to see it. Drum roll.
No, it's perfect. We're about to talk about the obsolete system of toll roads.
Oh.
Okay, and how we have been doing this thing, how long, Boyd, have we been doing this friggin' dance?
Late
97. Okay, so about as long as Apple hasn't been basically doing the right thing on podcasts, and we are still doing the toll roads the same friggin' way. We're still dealing with economic engines and communities that are built out today the same way we were doing when they were starting fledgling communities 20 years ago. Okay, in a manner that is no longer sustainable, in a manner that is actually detrimental to certain things like quality of life, established communities, health and well-being, safety, as well as being not very prudent financially. Right? So that's how we're going to tie this.
Beautiful. Love it. You're a genius.
Boyd Roberts here is running for 48th, right? The 48th Congressional 48th. District.
What cities does that cover? Give us some cities.
Yeah, what cities does that cover, Boyd?
So that runs from Seal Beach all the way down to Laguna Beach.
So it's along it's a coastal district?
It's a coastal district.
Yeah.
So it's not Irvine and all that.
It is not Irvine.
We've got to get to talk right into this.
Sorry about that. It is not Irvine. There's a little piece of Fountain Valley and a little piece of Westminster.
So who currently represents that district in Congress?
Mr. Dana Rohrabacher.
Dana Rohrabacher. There's a contentious guy that's been around the county for
Controversial
figure.
Right. Well, what? Now, give a little background, because, and I'm sorry if I'm putting you on the spot here, but we do this on the show all the time, right? We really believe that it's the people that are here. It's not just where you're at today, but what have you done in the past, you know, all the stuff where you find yourself, the journey that finds you here. What give us a little background about you, Boyd. Are you local? Are you local, Orange County?
So that's a good question. So I'm a local. I've lived and worked in the 48th for over half of my adult life.
Okay.
I moved away for a little while, and I came back just about a year and a half ago. I'm in Laguna Beach. Anyway, I've been...
What do you do?
I'm a real estate broker.
Real estate broker, okay.
Yeah. I've been working on a ballot initiative to create the University of California Online.
And tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, I thought they had classes online.
They do have classes online. So my ballot initiative is, humbly speaking, very transformative. It establishes the right of the public, the California public, to access all publicly owned higher education online.
Okay.
And creates a new University of California Online to facilitate that access.
Can I ask a couple of questions? Because we did a couple of shows on this concept of the Khan Academy. Are you familiar with the Khan Academy?
Yeah, so the idea originated with the Khan Academy. This is a little bit...
Have you ever heard the Khan Academy?
Mm-hmm.
And the basic idea is this guy came along, and so see if I can summarize it. This guy came along and said, why do you have to go someplace to go to college?
Right.
I can't afford to go there and live there. Why can't I still have access to the same lectures, the same course material. And maybe we don't need to go to college anymore. Maybe college is just a do-it-yourself, self-paced series of studies. You still get to see the Harvard lectures or the UC Berkeley lectures or whatever. You still take the test. You do all the stuff, but you do it virtually. And now people all over the world can get a college education even if they can't pay $100,000 and go sit there for 4 years.
So that's the con concept.
Right.
But are you saying it's similar?
I got the idea from Con.
Right.
Okay. But Con is K through 12.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it is not.
It's not college.
It is not university. So this is higher post-secondary education, and the Khan Academy does not have credit. So this is a little bit more than that.
It's not accredited, right? You don't get
a degree. So just to give people a little bit of background, Boyd, on how currently it is, right? When somebody says, well, you know, this university, for example, has particular degrees, and it's not all disciplines, right? There are certain disciplines that have, you know, an online alternative. In some cases, it may be a certain number of classes that are offered online within
right.
the discipline. And what you're proposing is a full-on degree program that's accredited, right? That would be an online format?
So, like I said, it establishes the public right to access all publicly owned education online. Okay, and to facilitate that right, it creates a University of California Online.
And so, I could get a degree through this program?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, the answer is yes. So, essentially, you would put all University of California classes into the new university, and the public would have access to the university via two divisions. There's a free division and a four-credit division.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the free division is like the Khan Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can basically go into the Khan Academy, and you can, especially in math, but you can access modules of math learning, very good, high-quality education.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of programs where they coordinate it with high schools and curriculums.
So it's either supplements what you're getting in the classroom, or it's instead of it, but there is no degree at the end of the rainbow.
Correct. So there's like I said, there's two divisions. So basically, in Division One, the free division, you would be able to access any University of California course online for free. You're essentially auditing the class,
right?
Which is revolutionary. I remember back in the 80s, I could go on, at certain times on the weekends, I could watch UCLA lecture, U.S.
Mm-hmm.
history lectures.
I remember that.
And you can't really do that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so here you could audit any class. So I could go and get any history lecture at any time that I want, if I wanted.
Wonderful for the public. Here's my question. Doesn't it bankrupt the UC system? Nobody's getting paid to go sit there.
Yeah. So that's this is all without any impact to the taxpayer. So let me expand on that a little bit. So that's Division One is free.
Right.
All right.
And I just have to ask one other question. So does that mean that somebody has to videotape or stream all of these shows so that they become archived or watchable?
Correct. And that's a little bit beyond my pay grade. I mean,
okay. But so the guys in the classroom, anyway, all you got to do is you can put a camera in and you could capture these things or stream.
It sounds like that you would have the opportunity to share the content that's being developed for the benefit of anybody. But they would do it. They would get it for free because it's already being developed. And technically, if you're a person,
there's no additional cost other than the
video. If you're a person in that state, you've technically your tax dollars have gone to pay for this.
Yeah, we're owners.
Right. We're owners of the
community. We own it, and we should have the right to
access what we own. That's a very interesting point because never thought about it that way.
Because you still think of a university as a private institution, even though it's a publicly supported institution.
So right now, the state of California is discriminating against the owners of the University of California. They're saying,
which is us.
Yeah.
So we got to pay twice. We got to pay a tax dollar to support the buildings and to support the salaries and all the other stuff, and then we got to pay to walk in the building and hear what they're teaching.
So what I say is that if there's a way to pay for it, then the public should have the right to access these courses.
Okay. So that'd be the key.
So how do
you monetize that? Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
But before I answer that question, I want to say one more thing about Division One. So Division One, there would be a way for students to ask questions to professors at their cost. Okay, so if you want to ask a question,
it would cost you.
Yeah, it would cost you.
It's almost like voting for, like, you know, America. What's it called?
It'd be like a toll.
Mixing questions. Boo. No, but no, it'd be almost like when you call in to basically vote for one of those, you know, whatever it is, The Voice or America's Top Talent.
There's
whatever.
A cost to
right. There's like it's like it, if you're asking a question, then you would pay to ask the question.
So, okay.
No, that's interesting because that it values the information that the professor has.
The time he's going to take to he or she to answer your question.
Very
one
interesting.
One of the
professors are going to love you.
Yeah. One of the that's where the money's going,
right,
to pay
yeah.
for their time.
Yeah.
One of the complaints about the free non-credit education, the Khan Academy is and especially the massive open online courses, the MOOCs. Okay, you can't get feedback from professors. Okay, so this would enable
you just watch. It's one-way communication. They teach you, listen.
Right. So they would have the opportunity at their expense to ask a question. But the beauty of it is they could put the questions and answers online, so nobody would ever have to pay to have that question
sure.
asked
It'd
and answered.
Sure. It'd be sort of like a big again. Chat room where everybody would do it. Okay, I could see that.
Well, there's almost an aspect of this that's kind of intriguing, right? Because isn't that exactly what happens with TED Talks?
Kind of. There is no chance to interact with them, though. The TED TED talks to you. The TED talks,
right? But there's also then instead of you pay for the access. The traditional model is that you pay for the access.
Right.
Now the model, and this is very much in keeping with technology's advancement. Now the model is you pay for immediate access.
Yes.
Or you get content later
or
for
personal
free.
Access.
Or partial content for free.
Right.
It's an interesting. It's an very interesting because we in It'd a certain be, way are doing this already in different ways of how we ingest technology. Right.
Imagine if
but
we,
not
this
when
show.
It comes to this traditional.
This show's free.
Yeah.
I mean, for the public to listen. What if instead of them being able to call in for free or text you for free, that cost?
Yeah, so like I said, we already don't have anybody calling. We just go live on Facebook, and then the questions start flying. Boom, 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 because nobody calls anymore.
Yeah.
Right? It's a cell phone in my hand, but I only use it to text. I don't call anymore.
You
right?
got that right.
Right. But, I mean, it's fascinating because what you're talking about, Boyd, is something that's already, quote-unquote, in the social DNA of how we interact with different things technologically.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to this bastion of academia, okay, it seems, and that's why I said the professors are going to love you, because you're actually also causing the professors to have a paradigm shift of how they deliver content.
Can I give you another parallel that we've had done shows on is telemedicine, as they call it. It won't be tele anymore, but
another perfect example.
The idea of remote medicine, where you don't go see the doctor, you call him up on your smartphone. And through Skype, he sees you, and you show him the sore, and maybe he can, you touch something, and that takes your blood pressure, and it conveys it to him, and all these other things that they, he takes some sensors, sends some information, looks at the problem, and gives you a basic diagnosis, and says, I think this could handle it, or no, you need to go to emergency to have somebody see that for real. And you're going to pay for that opinion. So there'll be some sort of free access that the guy will look at it, and then if you want some sort of medicine or some sort of answer, then I think you pay for that part of it. That the doctor does some of it for free and some of it they charge you for. Just like this show could be for free and it could have a paid component, the after hours, the more in-depth version of this show or something. So you're kind of saying the same thing. There's a free, we're paying to develop this stuff as taxpayers. We should have access to it. But if you want to take advantage of the professor's time and knowledge, then that you're going to pay for just as if you went and sat in the classroom.
You're going to pay.
Okay, so how do we pay for that? Because there's a little bit of an infrastructure that has to be put in place that currently is not in place.
Cameras
in
every room.
Editing.
Cameras, editing, streaming, all the stuff that goes.
So, I mean, are you assuming that there is an infrastructure cost that will have to be basically incurred?
Yeah, there would be a cost, and the student that has the question would have to pay that cost.
Okay.
But even before that, to set it up to get all this stuff online.
Okay, so now that it's there.
Okay, well, then I'm going to segue into Division 2.
The Division 2, yeah.
Okay, so Division 2 is the four-credit division, and it would be tuition for Division 2.
Okay.
Okay, so the tuition would need to be charged at such a rate to pay for Divisions 1 and Division 2.
I see.
So
they'll pay for the free part of it.
So, it's the assumption I would guess is that as technology gets cheaper, technically, unless it's all prevailing wages and all that stuff that factors in whenever it has to do with universities, the cost should be technically competitive, which, otherwise it's cost prohibitive because now you're building an infrastructure, and instead of basically putting it out to market value and having it bid on, now you basically have to do it. So there's some other complications of putting this in place.
Can I tell you from a technology standpoint, because obviously I'm pioneering some of this technology, we are streaming live.
But again, over time,
we're streaming over audio. The technology, like all this technology, has come down dramatically. The cost of everything, cost of the equipment, and it's become more and more robotic and more automated. The real cost of all this stuff used to be operators. You had to have humans sit there and operate the cameras. You had to have humans take the and upload it and do.
Oh, you have tracking now.
All of that stuff can be done automatically.
Right. So let me ask this though. I mean, this is me coming from a traditional education path. Okay, of going to university, doing an undergrad, I'm not going to say where, do a graduate school, and so there's sort of this sort of academics. And I did go to private school, so there's sort of also that sense of being on campus and that whole, life around campus that is part of that growth experience, right? So let's say that we've eliminated all the stuff. Let's say that, that you're now doing it remotely, you're doing it whatever, which has a lot of flexibilities and benefits. I think, personally, having gone through it differently, there are certain things that you lose in the process.
Right.
But at the same time,
the collaborative
as real estate gets more finite and we have to basically find satellite locations for things, and the idea is to bring education and knowledge to people versus cause them to have to funnel through some sort of infrastructure,
right?
I understand that. I totally do. And God knows there's enough malls falling out of business every day that we could turn into college campuses pretty much all over, right? But, okay. Why? You're telling me that basically the only reason I am paying for the knowledge, if I don't have any questions, I'm shy and I'm not going to ask any questions of professors, the only reason I'm paying for that knowledge is because I'm literally buying a degree.
Proof that you completed a series of courses.
I'm not knocking it because there's a certain honesty about that.
Well, what's a degree anyway? A degree just proves that you sat and went through a certain number of courses.
I mean, you're just saying, I'm buying a degree by paying for these classes because I could get the same content.
That sounds awful, though. It's like you're just buying it.
You still have to go through the time. You still have to go through the procedure and the curriculum and all this stuff.
If you want to end up with proof that you completed a series of curriculum and are now, therefore, certified to do something.
But there's a part of me that is okay with that, Paul, and I'll tell you why. Because there's a certain amount, look, I just filled an application to go teach, at a local university yesterday, literally, right? But there's a part of me that actually, I would rather have somebody absorbing information for their own desire to be knowledgeable, right? And have a population that's more and more accessible
enlightened
to that and enlightened if they want to. And if somebody actually really wants to pay for it because they're buying literally the street credentials for them to then use this and leverage it for the next thing, okay? There's a certain honesty in that, okay, that tears away and peels away all this sort of mystique about academia and mystique about the holiness of the Ivy League campuses and all this stuff. The bottom line is you're going in there, you're paying for a thing, so you can end up with something that is a leverageable tool to make you marketable in the workplace so you can go to the next step.
And let's not forget
you're missing one key component.
What am I missing, Boyd?
You're willing to do the work.
Well, you have to, right.
You're willing to pay, and you're willing to do the work.
Yeah, well, nobody's going to give it to you for free. Well, that's why I said you have to spend the
time. Buying a degree, though, suggests you don't do any work. You just pay them the money and they give you a degree.
No, but you know what? Doing the work and going to those universities,
that's a good point.
At the end of the day, you're still buying a degree. Because, look, having gone through it, at the end of the day, if you go to, and I would argue not even just postgraduate, but if you go to undergrad, unless you pick a university that has an alumni base that is engaged and powerful, that you basically are going to spend money and you're going to look at a return on your investment, okay, you have to factor that in. You're buying the right to get included into that club that has certain benefits and privileges that will then leverage later.
It's like buying any certification.
And at the end of the day, it is whatever you can afford it to be.
Right.
But you still have to do the work. I'm with you. I'm not. I didn't take that out of the process
at all.
So let me
make two more quick points.
But it is saying you're buying your education, okay, which I'm totally good with.
Universities, though, a number of years ago, back to the 80s, discovered the power of selling their knowledge to those who don't really want a degree. They just want to learn something. So you have adult education, continuing education, senior education classes. You're just going back because you'd like to learn geography. You're always fascinated with it. You're not going to do anything with it. You'd love to learn history. You'd love to learn French. Or those who can't afford to go full-time and they have certification programs. You can go at night and go to the UCI has a continuing education series of classes, and you can get some sort of, it's not a degree, but a proof that you took a completion of a certain thing, and maybe that, so far those haven't been marketable. You can't say I went and took 10 classes at UCI and they gave me a certificate of completion.
So to your point, and I think what may at its face look like it's a very dramatic thing that we're proposing, we already have alternative ways of basically either getting knowledge or paying for it or whatever.
Either just because you were interested or because you want to acquire some knowledge to improve your skills in some field.
So Boyd, okay, so what where are we at with that process? I mean, how receptive are people to it?
Let me go back to Division II here for a second. Okay, so this is the four-credit division.
Yeah.
Okay, so a very, very important component I haven't mentioned yet is that it's open enrollment. Everybody can get in.
Mm.
Okay.
Is that good or bad? Does everybody has access to the same? Don't you have to earn the right to go to UCLA, UC Berkeley?
I submit that is an elitist point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Education is always the answer. There is a huge need for education in this country, especially education for the people that don't make the cut at the brick-and-mortar schools. And I submit that if you're willing to do the work...
We got to keep you talking into the mic there. Don't look at me.
I submit if you're willing to do the work that you should, and if you're an owner... that you have the right.
Which, if you're a taxpayer in the state of California, you're an owner of the academic system.
Can I challenge you one more time, though?
Of course.
All right. So, at elite university, having gone to an elite university, there is a certain... you have to have the ability to do the work. If I took everybody and put them into a Harvard class of any kind, not everybody could keep up. Not everybody could handle that rigor. And so that's been the problem with public education. Do you teach down or do you teach up? Do you teach to the elite kids that can go faster and go deeper?
Good question.
Well, especially, good point, especially when you're evaluating the professors or the teachers based on the capabilities of that class percentile-wise to succeed.
Right.
Let's talk about the quality of the class first. Okay, so that it's called the University of California Online. So I call it UCO. So that UCO course, the accreditation needs to be equal to or better than the UC class.
Okay.
It has to be a little harder because of this elitist perception out there that it's because everybody can get in. So that person that gets an A at UCO, it needs to mean something.
Right.
Okay.
So it needs to be harder.
For example, and again, just to emphasize this, so that's been one of the my daughter went through public education. I'm a very big supporter of it. But I can see the value if she wasn't that academically gifted or good. So she struggled keeping up with just the kind of average stuff. But if she had been a gifted student, I'm not so sure we would have kept her in the public school. I think we would have paid to put her in a private school where she'd be with more brighter kids, smarter kids, kids, accelerated kids, advanced kids, kids who could go at a faster pace. Because I know that's been always the problem with any sort of public education. At what are you trying to aim at the middle and hope that the bottom can catch up, and then that the top, you're holding them back? They're not. They can go faster and deeper, and that the bottom, they still need help to catch up and follow the course.
But I think
is it all aimed at the C student?
I think you're looking at it from the top down.
Yeah.
You need to look at it from the guy who is willing to do the work.
I get it. I applaud the egalitarian nature. Anybody can go to it, and if you're willing to put in the work and the time, go for it. And you don't have to come from a special school or have pay the money or have the, all the elitist other things that keep you out of the elite schools. But I just want to make sure maybe there's different gradations that you're either in an advanced class or a beginner class, because not everybody is going to have the same capability.
Yeah, but Paul, you keep going back to this thing as if it is an infrastructure that exists in a space. You keep talking about the class as if it is made of a cohort of people that are in the same space. Mm-hmm. Each individual person that is connecting on this online is their own classroom. You don't need to curve. You don't need to be grading at a curve one way or the other, because each individual person will be gauged and graded on the knowledge of the material.
So you're going to be graded on the content of your accomplishment in the classroom.
Right.
And not on your credentials to get in. Sorry, but that is an elitist argument.
So then what's the encouragement to get A's or B's, or do we get rid of grades at public level?
No, it's even more important that you get a good grade, because there's no barrier, there's no gatekeeping.
But exactly, you need the grade, and from what I'm hearing, the grade isn't evaluated based on what the rest of the class is doing. It's based on your individual knowledge of the material.
Yeah. So if I get if I go to UC Berkeley,
right.
I tell people, hey, I went to UC Berkeley. Nobody asked me my GPA.
Right.
Nobody asked me
right.
how I did.
Because their assumption is that you worked harder or were smarter to get there. Right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. But if you go to UCO, you need to say, hey, I got a 3.2 average, or I got a 4.0.
Because anybody can go there.
Because right? anybody goes there.
You know what I like about this idea? Even there's another element to this that I really, really like, is the fact that if you are basic, right now, I'm going through this myself, right? If I'm looking for example, doing a master's in public administration, mm-hmm. okay, and I want to do a concentration, let's say, or a minor in historical preservation, okay, I can't find a campus that's going to allow me to do that.
Mm-mm.
Because they exist in different campuses, right?
Right?
So
and you
have
to stop your life
right.
and drop
so,
out
so,
and go
so
do
let
that.
So let me finish this thought, okay? So what does that do? That means that we step away from this model that every single person has to fit into a mold. Me, Rod, wants a combination of X, Y, and not Z, but A
right.
for my academic involvement and interest, and I can go and I can get that because I'm online. I can actually grab an elective from this quote unquote campus.
Right.
I got another elective from this campus, and I can actually form my own
curriculum. Yeah,
absolutely.
But
I want to go back to Paul's earlier point.
Right.
There's a pilot study at Cal State San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Brown came in, and they brought in some online classes, and they would have real credit.
Mm-hmm.
There was like three classes, one statistics and two math classes. It was they deemed it an abysmal failure because the completion rates were extremely low.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's essentially where Paul was going here. At the, mm-hmm. But because there's Division One, there's a free division where you can get all the knowledge if you're a less serious student, and because there is tuition and you have skin in the game when you're in Division Two, the completion. I submit that the completion rates are going to go up because people that are in the brick and mortars now, because the accreditation is fungible, they'll be able to complete their degrees online if something happens. I think the completion rates are going to go way up, and I don't buy the arguments that the Division II students aren't going to be in it to do it.
Unless.
But
there is something to be said for forcing somebody to go somewhere every day that makes you complete it. If I can do it when I want to.
Which is a good segue into another one of the features
good.
That I was going to talk
okay,
about.
Okay, but before we go there, and I know we started late, so we're going to...
Yeah, we got about 10, 15 minutes, we'll say here.
Okay. But let me ask this. Doesn't the bottom line, whether you're doing it online or physically in an environment, an actual physical environment, depend on the... workforce of teachers that are available to actually provide the academic training? I mean, you still have, yeah. And you've just increased the quote unquote cohort that would be going in there, right? So, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say, okay, teachers' pensions, you know, state of California, large infrastructure of teachers and you know, tenured professors and all this stuff. Adjuncts. How does that work? Are you going to have more adjuncts and less tenured?
So that's beyond the scope of the. This is a constitutional amendment to the California state constitution.
Okay.
So I can't write in those type of details.
How you get paid and who gets paid.
Yeah, I'm not,
okay. And is this. Is this a commitment?
But it is to create a separate university. So this would.
I don't think
like
that would. I wouldn't worry about that, Ron. I think the teachers are going to get paid one way or another. They're going to get paid by standing in the classroom or getting videotaped in the classroom. Somebody's going to pay for it, and they're still going to be there. And in fact, maybe you need more teachers because you have more people
going
to school.
I understand.
It's the Full Employment Act for teachers.
Brian, you know? I understand that,
and it's going to be high quality, and we're going to hire.
I'm sure teachers won't have an issue with it. What I'm saying is, from experience, okay, the way that academics, be it from school districts on, are funded,
right?
Okay, is there's a finite resource that basically goes into that,
right?
So that whole model
to
would
fund
also
the building
will,
and the
will also have to be changed.
Well, I think that's the threat. The threat isn't to the quality of education. The threat isn't to the access to the students. The threat is to those invested in the administration.
Into the existing structure.
Yeah. Your wife works for Long Beach State or something.
I'm waiting for her to call.
Yeah. And so are they all going to get fired?
Director of Admissions at the College of Education.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So are we going to... honey, we're talking about your job just becoming triple the size that it is now.
Or we don't need you anymore because the admission's all just done online and everybody can join and there is no admission.
There's not going to be an admissions department. Yet.
So you're out. And what do you do with those physical campuses, those physical buildings? Turn them into soccer fields?
I submit that the brick and mortars aren't going to change one bit. People are going to want to go to the brick and mortars. They're going to have to apply. They're going to have to go through their screening.
Why
process.
Would you still want to go to a brick and mortar if you could do this
so
at home?
I'm going to
I need to get to some of the other key features.
Yeah, let me take a couple of things that came up here. It says, is college a function of elite to continue to keep the poor poorer? I mean, this is the stuff that starts to fly
yes.
here, right?
Of course
right.
it is.
So,
of course
so,
it is.
So this is
that's a given.
To borrow from Boyd, this is beyond the scope today. But go ahead. And this is my brother-in-law who's asking this. He's a troublemaker on my Facebook.
To perpetuate the class system. Right? Of course it is.
So he's a social worker, right? See, this is what happens. So go ahead and talk about the other points because I want to transition away because this is an interesting initiative. And basically, if I may, so what you're saying is if you actually got elected, this is one of the things that you would actually push for.
This is, well...
As an amendment.
Either
to
way, he's going to try and do an
I'm
amendment.
I'm putting this ballot measure, which is separate from my...
you are putting this on
yeah.
in 2018.
I'm ready to submit it to the California Attorney General.
Okay.
I have language written, and I'm ready to submit it. It'll probably be done later this month.
Interesting.
That'll be on the November 2018 ballot.
Did you get enough signatures already?
Well, after it gets through the Attorney General, then I'll
I
need,
see.
Then
you can go out and have
586,000 signatures.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so get your other points in before we run out.
So a couple of other features.
Well, I want to talk toll road.
I know. Well, he's got to get
a couple of other features are that the students can take classes at their own pace.
Yeah,
and
clearly.
Back to the costs. It's self-funding because you pay for the tuition, but there is a feature in there that mandates that the state can't jack up the tuition either. It can't be a profit center for them.
Okay.
Okay. So it has to be the tuition has to be based on the cost and no more.
It's like Medicare, the cost plus 10%. Okay.
Okay. And then another feature is that course tuition includes the books. Mm-hmm. So the idea there is to make the University of California Online a large buyer of books.
Well, but the books are electronic, aren't they?
Well,
maybe.
Hopefully, and there is a provision to use open access books as much as possible. Also, there any unique classes that are in the Cal State University system or the CCC system, those would also be included. And it would allow the accreditation has to be accepted at UC, CCC, and CSU. So any CCC, UC, or CSU student could complete their
But you are taking the elitist system in the state of California academic system and
it. They can finish online.
UCs are online, no different.
At their own pace. UCs, anybody can take a class. UCs, everybody can do it at their own pace.
We don't need those stinking admission officers.
You can't see Paul. He's like, he's got his fist raised.
Yeah, baby.
You know, rebellious
power
baby
to the people.
Okay. No, but
It's interesting because
there's rivalry between even SCs and UCs, right?
The only part I objected to, because I did go through an elite system, I went to the University of Michigan, which back in that area was the top of the system. You could go to the Michigan State or other schools, but Michigan, University of Michigan was the
cold
Berkeley.
There in the winters.
Yeah, it was very cold. And so the only way you could get in is if you, one, had a certain GPA, and two, if you passed a certain mark in the SATs, right? So it was supposed to eliminate, it was supposed to be the cream of the crop, go there, and you were supposed to get an accelerated education from even greater, they had better professors and better classes, and it was more competitive, and you were with, you know, people like yourself that had all qualified to be there, and that's why we worked our ass off to get there, so, and now you're going to throw that out. Anybody can go to U of M, anybody can go anywhere.
Here is a good question. I want to ask this, and then I'm going to just give the Boyd a few minutes, because I really do want to talk about Toll Road.
I don't think you're going to have time to talk about.
Well,
we need to talk about Toll Road.
But one question, and I don't necessarily need an answer, but it's something that absolutely has to factor in, is how do we have these students that are currently already buried under a lot of student debt?
Right.
This is
going to dramatically reduce costs.
Well, clearly. You don't have to go sit
because
in a building.
You have a larger population of people, basically? Is it economies of scale?
Well, yeah, because you have economies
of
scale.
It's Uber. You don't have to actually have buildings anymore.
Well, this is
here.
This is a
Airbnb,
worldwide university, okay? People in Tokyo or Sydney.
I'm going to let them into the system, too?
By the way, we had a listener from Rotterdam.
Well,
so.
because
he wants to join.
And we want them because they bring down the cost for everybody. Because the tuition is based on cost.
You're eliminating the whole class system in the country.
Okay, so
education is always the answer.
Okay, so education, I love that. I think it's at the very least very innovative and definitely worth having a conversation at. I think we are always better off when we have difficult conversations like this that are innovative, regardless where we end up.
Can I just give you one? You always want to tie in the purpose of the show. So it's supposed to be the aging journey. We keep getting off that journey into these political conversations of late. But it does open up what Rod's talked about many times in the show. What do you do in this third act? Me, the aging baby boomer. It's got 30 years to kill now. Here, maybe that's a bad analogy, but
right. But you got a lot of time on your hands.
I got a lot of time.
And you still
want
to be productive, and maybe you want to change the direction of what you've been basically pursuing. And how do you do that? And how do you do that actually without going into a classroom with a whole bunch of 20-year-olds?
Yeah, I'm not going to go. That would be a barrier, even if I could afford it and could afford to take the time. I'm not going to go sit in the classroom with a bunch of 20-year-olds.
So definitely. I love the idea. I think it's a very innovative idea. Thanks for bringing that up to the show. But let's talk about another thing that is actually unifying a lot of people and tearing down a lot of
15 minutes to talk
barriers,
toll roads.
Okay? Let's talk about the toll road. Give a little background real quick.
I'm a Democrat, and I'm...
That explains everything.
Stay
in your corner.
I want to speak to the needs and wants of Republican, Independent, and Democratic voters. We're in red districts, and we need to give Republicans and Independents especially a reason to vote for Democratic candidates.
Clearly.
So I'm trying to speak to the needs and wants. I think the University of California Online speaks to those needs and wants at no cost to them. They have universal access.
We got that. Okay, so next one.
So the second ballot initiative that speaks to the needs and wants is the toll roads. The toll roads were built on a lie. The lie was that the owners of the toll roads were the bondholders.
Mm-hmm.
Bondholders,
by definition, can't own anything.
Do not own.
They're lenders.
Yeah, they're lenders. And so they keep... referring to the bondholders as the owners, anyway. So
they're only the owners promise, if you default on the bond and they take it back.
The
right.
Promise. Yeah. The promise. The toll roads is that hey, we'll have them. We'll have tolls for 20 years, and there'll be freeways after that. So I want to keep.
And that was 20 years ago.
Almost, it was 20 years ago. That was 20 years ago.
Well, has it really been 20 years?
Yeah, it was 73. It was 20 years. Yeah.
So we'll hold on to them as being, you know, pay to drive for 20 years.
So let's just give those who aren't quite clear. This was supposed to be the state. I'll give you the other argument I've heard many times. The states couldn't afford to build these roads, and people ascertained they needed them. Whether or not they did it is a big debate, but there was a theory that we needed more of roads, and the state didn't have the funds to do it, so it was a public-private partnership. They would go out and borrow money from bondholders who would then get a return on that investment, and that would pay them back over 20-year periods from the tolls collected, and then once the bondholders were paid back, they were supposed to revert back to the state and be the state was handed off, completed, paid-for freeway.
Except the tolls collected
weren't sufficient.
I think were overemphasized, and they never materialized.
The public has kept their part of the bargain. They were promised 20 years. They paid tolls for 20 years. So all's my ballot initiative, which has not been written yet, would say is that after 20 years of collecting tolls, any toll road or toll lane would henceforth be a freeway or a free lane.
But let's point out the problem why that hasn't happened. You got to point out the problem. The problem is the tolls weren't sufficient. They didn't generate enough toll revenue to pay off the bondholders.
And the unpaid bond obligations would henceforth be obligations of the state general fund.
There you go.
Yeah, but Paul,
that's the problem.
Like any other freeway.
Right, but there's something else that also happened, okay? And I've said this before on this show when I had a couple of ladies from San Clemente who were talking about the extension 241. Another thing happened. And it's the same friggin' thing that happened with their Transcontinental Railroad, is that these toll roads were not this benign element that went through the wilderness and you collected tolls in order to pay back the people and then turn the roads. It was a friggin' development agency.
Right.
Okay, it made for the development of the lands on either side of the Transcontinental. The toll road, right? Okay, so the pretense that this is for the states that cannot afford and all this stuff, baloney. And on top of that is, unless I'm mistaken, the monies that went into payment for those toll roads were monies that we, the people of the state, also participated in, not just in terms of paying tolls.
So you have,
correct?
You have two
this
issues.
This was not all privately funded,
so
right?
So you got to have two issues that you separate. One was, did we need to build new roads?
I don't believe it is.
It wasn't. It wasn't privately funded.
So do we need to build new roads? Did we need these roads? Was their argument for congestion correct, or was this really just a trick?
You're getting in the weeds now.
Was this just a trick to develop the land? That's what you're saying. What he's saying is whether we need it or not.
I have not used the toll road for over 4 weeks. Okay, more or less, right? And I will tell you, I have watched. More or less. I think at the very beginning, just like an addict, hooked on the toll road, it took me about 4 attempts out of habit. I just got on the 73, right? I have yet to basically really have an infuriating moment on the road due to traffic. Now, if there was an accident or a spill or something that
I don't care.
You've
lived without it.
Okay, I've lived without it for 4 weeks, right? And I will tell you, I was spending $500 a quarter on my own usage of that toll road, right?
Need it like you thought you needed it. But let me just separate those two because they're completely separate.
Well, but the congestion isn't there either, is what I'm saying.
But his argument isn't. His argument is whether we needed the toll road. It's like, damn it, you made a deal, now live up to it.
Right.
That's his argument.
Right. And I agree with Boyd.
I don't think people realize, that's what I'm trying to make clear here, the general public doesn't realize that that deal was not completed. The toll roads didn't generate enough toll to pay off the bondholders, so they keep refinancing the bond and stretching out. What's the next potential date when they'll be paid off?
73, I believe, goes out to 2048.
2048 they're projecting. So we won't get that road back to 2048 because too many people like you didn't use the damn road, and therefore it didn't pay for itself like they promised.
So how does congestion get relief when people don't use the road?
I'm not saying you don't have an argument,
I'm just throwing that in there,
You've
too.
You've got a bad attitude.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but no, I'm just saying, okay, let me just for a moment accept the fact that it will relieve traffic.
Right.
Okay, at $4 to $7 a trip, nobody's going to use it, and therefore it is now economic discrimination.
It didn't pencil out like they said it was going to, and that led to two problems. It supported your argument that it wasn't needed in the first place, and it supported his argument that I'm not going to spend another 20 years paying it off. Give it back to me,
and
damn
I,
it.
And I said it before we started, right? I said, okay, you want to build a road? I'll tell you what. You can't build any more roads, okay? And if you're going to build a road, then there's a moratorium on development on either side of that road, 10 miles in either way or 20 miles in either way until you pay off that road.
Right. That's a radical
Until you
idea.
Pay off that road, you radical. Do not get to develop. There's no permits given for any development, commercial, residential, on either side of that road.
It was there to develop the land. Come on. We know that was the purpose of it, like the transcontinental.
So what is stopping you from writing that initiative?
Death threats.
He's
targeted by drone.
I just need an attorney to write it up.
You need an attorney to write it up?
I need $2,000 to submit it to the California Attorney General.
Okay.
Both ballot initiatives are gonna garner very motivated, strong constituents of people that are going to get the signatures. We're not going to have to pay signatures.
But we
missed out on the really good part. The committee is called the Committee to Support Making the Toll Roads Free.
Okay.
That committee is going to also oppose the extension of the 241 toll road.
Now you got Rod's interest.
Okay, and is that committee in place already?
Yeah, I've already got the committee formed.
Okay.
The ballot initiative itself has not been written.
So do you have a timeline when you would basically have that done? Because
needs,
I know a lot of people that
he
are
needs
listening.
An attorney and $2,000.
I know the people that are listening in South County.
I need this is a call to action. I need help.
Need an attorney and $2,000.
Yeah, I need an attorney and $2,000. And then I need an army of signature gatherers after it clears the Attorney General, probably later this summer.
So let me ask you this, and I'm going to turn the spotlight on a party side.
5 minutes.
On the party side of it, right? What do you think this is something that is going to be stomached by establishment party leadership on either side? Because there is definitely in deep connections and tentacles, if you will, from the existing structure, transportation structure.
The politics.
Yes.
Okay. So,
well, I mean, that's part of the reality, right? I mean, I on the people on the street, the boots on the ground, it's a cross-political divide. I mean, it's got everybody lockstep with one another.
Let's talk about
the politics. But what about the established political system?
Okay. So, right now, the Democrats have a supermajority, just barely.
Mm-hmm. By one or two seats, I think. Yeah.
If Josh is
Josh
recalled,
Newman, who was on the show, yeah.
Yeah, if he's recalled, then there's no more supermajority in the state Senate. This could turn Orange County completely blue. If if the Democrats get behind these two ballot measures, if we give Republicans and independents in these red districts a reason to vote for Democratic candidates in these seats, we could have a supermajority. We could turn the entire county blue, and we could have a super majority in the legislature.
But I'm going
to.
Go ahead.
That's one part of the.
So you're saying these initiatives could be that tipping point?
Yeah, but you see, there's
and
an
I
interesting.
Think,
there's
and
an interesting
I think,
thing coming.
And I okay. So yeah, it's going to cost the state taxpayer to have these toll road bond obligations that they didn't have before.
Sure.
It's going to cost them. But the Democrats in the legislature are going to buy into it because they're going to have a super majority.
Yeah, but I'd argue that those bond measures that you're talking about that the state doesn't have today, okay, what potentially is endangered by those toll roads is a loss of revenue and quality and equity of life, equity value and quality of life in certain areas that will cost the state. So the state is not free from paying a price for those toll roads right now. Okay, especially if they continue to extend.
But they don't see that then.
Right.
You have to show that to them right now.
Well,
nine thousand
homes that have $1.5 million value that are about to take a 20% hit. You tell me what the tax impact on that is.
Nothing, because they're all under Prop 13. They're all taxed at
You actually have it exactly wrong, because you have the right to.
To bring it down?
Yeah, to bring it down if it goes down.
Okay.
Yep. So now you've lost property taxes in the process. The toll roads cost the state property taxes by running close to homes in established communities. So, but I'm gonna say something because you keep going back, and I know it's just, you know, it is the registration. I mean, the only party I was ever registered at was a Republican Party, and I dropped that a long time ago. And I've been independent. And I have a lot of people that we both know that are on the Democratic side, from Bernie supporters to more traditional blue. Okay. And I saw that
100% Bernie.
Right. And I was too last election, okay? But I will tell you, I've seen the report that UCLA and UCI put together about the changing face of Orange County in terms of the political distribution.
First time that this county has voted for a Democrat for president since, I don't know.
Right, but forever. I think also
1936.
There was also the women vote and all that stuff. So it wasn't just a party down the party line. There was lack of representation on women's interests on one side. And I think so. Here's my point. This thing about the toll road, okay. And the position against the toll road, I'm seeing that position taken by people on both sides of the political divide, right? So I would look at it as being, regardless of who is running that initiative, pushing for that initiative, this is an opportunity which is very much we are in dire need of in this country, is an opportunity to actually connect across the political divide.
And your guess,
on an issue of this nature that impacts us so deeply.
We're speaking to the needs and the wants of the voters.
Right. And your guest said something interesting.
Regardless who gets elected, as long as that is in the best interest of the community.
And your guess
community said, over party is what I basically it is. That's what's happening down south right now.
Your guest said something interesting before the show started. The last time we've seen this in our community was when the whole south part of the county rallied against the airport,
right,
where Democrats and Republicans and independents came together and stopped it. It wasn't
reason,
one group versus another.
And for those who weren't around,
what airport
was that? Guys?
Yeah, the El Toro.
The El Toro airport. Yeah.
The reason why that succeeded in the end is South County. South County was united like. There was such unity of purpose.
You look at people like Pat Bates and Lisa Bartlett, who've now grown up the political ladder. Both of them were Republicans.
Didn't they come out of that?
Propelled them. Yeah, they were all mayors of some local county, and they, despite being Republicans and pro-growth and all the other stuff, they came out and switched sides and said, no, we're against the airport, and joined the overwhelming anger
tied
that's and what's interesting,
and does this feel the same for you guys?
Well, can I back up for a second?
Yeah.
Because one of the things because he mentioned one of the other things, when there were four or five votes on the airport before it was finally shot down, the first couple of votes it was approved, and
we won the third one and it got overturned in the courts.
Yes. But you admitted something that I admit, too. The first time it got voted, I wasn't living in South County. I was living in North County. I voted for the airport.
Yeah.
Until I lived
in Newport Beach. I voted for the airport. I lived in Huntington Beach. I voted for the airport. And I moved to Aliso Viejo right under the flight path, and I was dead set against it.
And that's what I moved to Rancho and suddenly realized this is going to fly over my head. It suddenly became real for me. And I think for too many people, it's just, oh, it's about those people down there. I don't care what happens to those people in San Clemente. I don't care. It doesn't impact me. You can say whatever you want about property values and all the other stuff, impact life. It's their problem, not mine. Which is part of the argument, I'm sorry I have to say again, when you guys weren't fighting it when it was further up, San Clemente wasn't up in arms when it was going through Laguna Canyon. They weren't.
Right.
But now they're up in arms because it's going through their neighborhood.
Right. Forgive us, Paul. Forgive us, Paul, for we have sinned.
Okay,
we did not come to your support and your aid when the toll road was threatening and terrorizing your neighborhood.
That's right.
But could you please come to ours? No, I mean, it's true. Look, you guys just said it, right? Until you were in the flight path of the plane, it wasn't personal.
Right.
Okay? And like it or not, that is the way things happen. I feel it in my own pocketbook.
Yeah.
It threatens my livelihood, the view off the back of my house, until that becomes the case. But here's the thing, okay? You're not dealing with a scattering of people. This is a densely built-out, developed area with high-valued homes and pretty savvy people that, we joke down there that people are, we say San Clemente is a scrappy little town. Yeah, it doesn't shy away. In fact, we shine when there's a street fight. And this is coming on like this. This is even more, this will be more funded, and there's been more boots on the ground in so quick a time frame than even the fight on the watershed on the San Mateo. 4,000 signatures in less than 3 weeks.
But what surprises me is I thought the same would happen in Laguna, because Laguna fits all those parameters. It's very dense. It's very tightly. It's very active. It's very organized. It's very against any sort of outside influence and thing. And they weren't able to stop it. So I'm surprised and pleased at the response
But Laguna did something else. Laguna went down the path of basically grandfathering in a whole bunch of a buffer zone. Now, the interesting discussion that's going on, as far as I am told, is that there are people from Laguna now reaching out to OCTA or people that and saying, we need to do something to widen the canyon because of the congestion. So it's an interesting dilemma. The people that basically stopped the road, Dole Road coming in, can we widen the canyon now? But at least you're doing it on your own terms. I think that's the other thing that is paramount here, is that there's a sense that there's this entity that is not even in town, that is not being very, very honest, that's not being very transparent, that's doing everything they can to misguide and deform the message down to the language that was in their release forms that I looked at, that said we reserve the right to modify and have global rights to whatever it is that you give us in a testimonial at that last meeting, right? Right? There's talk about potential violations of the First and Fourth Amendment, okay, and basically, you know, the possible civil rights violations by TCA. You're talking about an entity that's coming out and forcing itself, literally like the monster coming down from the hill, right?
That's the way they felt in Laguna when it came. And you're saying
they probably have all that on video cameras.
They do. Yeah. You're saying the mistake Laguna made was that when they built the community, they anticipated they left open space in. And therefore, they could argue, well, this is a better use of that open space. And
they actually formed a conservancy, I believe, and they funded purchasing that land as a buffer.
Right.
From the end of the toll road.
And you told me that I didn't know this, that at one point trying to block it, they actually tried annexing some of that land.
They did annex. They reached all the way to Elisa Viejo.
And that didn't stop it.
No.
So why now is San Clemente able to stop it? And don't tell me because it's a different community and they're more radicalized.
64,000 people.
Yeah.
Average home is about 900,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's still Laguna.
Average, not 64,000 people. Laguna is not 64,000 people.
It's not that dense? Okay.
It's not that
it's
dense.
20,000.
Right. It's a third, okay, of the population. You have the average age in San Clemente is about 42. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of people that are seniors and multi-generational nature of the community as well. That's all factors that are different than Laguna. And I think
because they're both affluent communities.
There's another thing that happened is immediately right out of the chute last year, the city council came out unanimously against it.
I would think in Laguna they were unanimously against
it. And to be honest, not to be cynical, anybody who is in a changing face of Orange County, where the county is basically turning purple, mm-hmm, okay, anybody on the conservative side of
it's turning blue.
Well, okay, it's turning blue.
If we hold our breath long enough, we
can have this ideological argument and certain concentrations, all whatever. All I'm saying is that South County is still considered a bastion on the Republican side.
Sure,
a stronghold, right?
And isn't San Clemente? Isn't San Clemente all Republican?
I don't think it's a given, because I know that over the last 8 to 10 years, I've seen more and more people that were registered Republicans drop the party and become independent. Now that's the other thing that's happening. So it's not necessarily the Democratic Party is growing by leaps and bounds. You got a lot of people departing the Republican Party. I mean, let's call it like it is, right?
The county registrar in here several times.
Okay.
Whose name escapes me now, an Irishman. I forgot his name. Anyway, and he said the largest, which I don't think people grasp yet,
right,
the largest group of registered voters are no longer Republicans in Republican Orange
Independent.
County. Independent.
Absolutely. And we are getting to the point, I'm one of them, we're getting to the point where it's going to be a tipping point. I mean, it's already happened in the last election. The thing about South County, though, is that anybody, and this is why a lot of them, not to be cynical, but a lot of them are rushing to make their statements known about their position on this toll road, because this thing has crossed a cross-party line. This has got everybody, independents, Republicans, Democrats, saying, hell no, no toll roads
in
South County.
When you tell me Daryl Issa and Bill Breaux, one an old war horse in the Republican Party and the other a radical in the Republican Party, Issa, have now come out and said, if the people don't want it, I don't want it.
And I'm going to be nice, and I'm going to say, if you really look at this and what it really has as part in terms of negative impact and the multitude of levels of negative impact, if you had the ability to look at yourself in the mirror in the morning, you would not come out in any shape or form other than against it.
Can I ask you just two questions? That I do, again,
it's not necessarily against the toll per se, like, you know, with Boyd is saying that, you know, there's a break in the contract here.
Right.
No, but if you ran this toll around Pendleton and down San Diego, it would solve some of the issues and it would address some of the concerns. But what they are proposing, under the guise that, oh, we're just looking at lines on a map, which is baloney because there's surveyors out there every day.
I know.
Right? And drones being flown and everything's being captured. Anybody who's looking at this that is an elected official, okay, cannot in good conscience not come out against it.
Except
and so that's why they're
really
coming out against
it.
Plus, there's the political fallout in a year before an election year.
So,
nobody. This is not our first rodeo. I'm not stealing from San Juan, right? But this is not San Clemente's first rodeo.
So here's my question. Right now, I don't know enough. Since we lost the fight further up the toll road, we got it in our backyard. We haven't paid as much. I don't think people in Rancho Santa Margarita are wound up to go join the fight again in San Clemente. I don't think the
wait till the toll roads go up in price.
I don't think that the people in Laguna right now who lost that fight are pulling out their banners and saying, let's go fight it again here.
Oh, they are. They are.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah. They're sitting right here right now.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe. So if you got to re-energize those people that fought the fight before and lost. And my question is, what stage is it at? How do you stop, other than publicly screaming? Didn't they just solve an environmental suit that was blocking it? And aren't they free to go ahead?
Solved? Excuse me, solved?
Settled.
They settled a suit after 10 years, and then they patted themselves on the back and gave themselves an environmental award.
But that was
give me a friggin' break. What is this, the participation award that we give kids when they show up for
T-ball? You missed my point, so I used the wrong word. They've settled it, and that was the only thing standing in their way. Now, there's nothing other than you people screaming, don't build it. That's not going to stop them.
Oh, when you have 64... Okay. I said this to you last time. Okay, city of San Clemente alone. Now, I think there are people because San Juan, there's a possible impact on San Juan than on the border of San Juan to San Clemente.
San Juan already said if you build it through their town, we're okay. You build it through our town.
Well,
we're
but mad. No, they didn't say that. To be fair to them, they said no to any of the routes that go through their town. But whether they said no or yes to the route through San Clemente, what they did say is that hell no toll road through a community that's established. So they have set a precedence that San Clemente can refer to and say, well, if San Juan, it's good enough for San Juan, then it applies for us, right? So I'm not gonna fall into the trap that the TCA and the toll roads probably want, which is one community fighting against the other, right? But I will say this, right? The plan that they're proposing makes no sense. You're challenging and terrorizing, I will call it like it is. You are terrorizing a community that is established, that has 64,000 population, okay, of which 30,000 people voted last year, okay, in last election cycle. If you take 64,000 and you shave away the kids and everybody under 18, okay, the number gets smaller. And look at the percentage of how many of that 64,000 population voted. That is a very engaged community.
I got it, but you still missed my question.
If somebody is running for elected office in that area or on a regional level and can think they can afford to lose 10,000 to 15,000 votes and still survive, they're doing the math.
But the TCA, the Orange County Transportation Authority that funds this whole thing, or that puts on this, isn't it the Orange County Transportation Authority? They're not an elected body.
Doesn't matter. Are you going to claim eminent domain?
No, I'm just saying, to
run your road,
aren't they ready to build? What do you got? What's the plan to stop other than stand
this
in the
would
middle
run,
and say
this would run through property that is public? Hold on, public space designated that is part of an HOA. It is owned property that is owned by somebody.
But they already won the right, didn't they? To finish it.
No.
The only thing standing in their way, I thought, was the lawsuit, and they settled the lawsuit.
Why would they have run the right to run it through San Clemente and basically take away property that was set aside by developers, never built on and taken advantage of, that is owned by HOAs, owned by homeowners? Where's the compensation?
You're missing my point. Is the next battle to be won in the courts, Or has that been argued, and now you're just waging a political battle trying to put pressure on politicians to turn back what could be built?
Because they're trying to justify it based on future needs of traffic.
You're missing the whole point. Where's the barricade go up? You're just saying...
Paul, the barricades are going up on every level, okay? There was a meeting yesterday with a law firm to basically file a civil rights lawsuit, violation lawsuit against the TCA.
Well, I know
okay,
because they searched your frisked you or something when you came in their meeting.
They frisked women with wands, and they took away stuff from their purses.
I got it. Okay. But that's not going to stop them building
the minute that they make any statements that is solid, the money is already being collected to fight this in the courts. And whereas Surf Rider and Sierra Club needed to pull on their membership in order to fight the watershed,
right.
Okay, in order to collect the monies and the bodies of people, when you threaten people in 9,000 homes that are over a million, the money needed for a lawsuit is not going to be hard to be found.
But where's the environmental lawsuit's already been filed and settled. You can't reopen that.
To Boyd's point about bringing the roads back to free, there's a petition already circulating.
The airport was killed not by an anti-airport initiative. It was killed by the Great Park Initiative. Larry Agron was a genius.
Right.
He thought out of the box. It was completely something else.
There's already a petition to dissolve the TCA.
There's lots of ways to skin this cat.
I'm trying to say, and I don't know enough about this to really argue this point, but it seems like they have legally cleared the hurdles, the last hurdle they needed to do to go buy it, build it, eminent domain it, whatever they're going to do, and start going that route. And they're now trying to finish that last phase. And suddenly there's a large group of people, very angry, who've risen up. I don't know that you can fight it in the courts again, because that fight's already happened. I think you're going to have to fight it politically.
But you keep referring to this as finally. We have said no to the toll roads three times in San Clemente already.
But they keep moving on. They keep going forward. They did settle a lawsuit that was... Without the lawsuit settlement, they could not have gone.
So I'll play devil's advocate. Your position on this is the same as me saying exactly the same words to you when they were talking about running it through San Mateo. Well, didn't they get the right to do that, to run it through San Mateo? It was a done deal. What are you going to do? And it still got, and it got defeated.
Because you have to then, what the airport, his analogy is in the airport, they had the right, they won the right to build it. And they had the land. But we came back and voted again and overturned that vote.
Yeah.
So you have to go back and get the public so rallied that the politicians will say, even though we could keep pushing this, we're going to stop pushing.
I'm telling you right now, anybody who does not support a no on the toll road in South County, I will make a prediction. They will take a hit, okay, from their base of 10,000 to 15,000, and that is only from San Clemente.
And who are those people? Who are there any politicians that are still actively pushing for this and say, heck no,
According to what happened in the last 10 days, everybody that I know that is a player in there, other than maybe some people on city council and people that have sort of a vested interest or they basically have long-standing involvement with the toll road, from the national level to the regional and state level, they have come out in statements that are very, very either guarded, we cannot approve the current, current alignments that are being proposed, to all the way through, to Bill Breaux's credit, statement that says that I cannot support any alignments that do not have the support of the city and the community in which they are being proposed to run.
Who's the county supervisor for that part of the county?
Lisa Bartlett.
Has she come out against it?
Her statement is the one that has been dragging, and my understanding from what I just got online while we were on the show is that supposedly statement is forthcoming. Now, we did meet with her representative a couple of weeks ago, and I'm a little disappointed that the statement hasn't come out yet, and I would encourage her to basically put that statement out. She's on my Facebook.
I just saw her in an event a couple of weeks ago.
Right, and especially, and this is a personal message to Lisa, I'm a supporter of Lisa. I was a supporter of her when Dana Point. Okay, but this is a personal message to Lisa. When you are supporting basically the rights and looking out for the best interests of seniors and you're involved in the senior community, endangering people's homes that are retirees and seniors that need to basically save the value of the equity in their homes in order to sustain themselves during the years where they will need to leverage that for care, okay, there's a conflict between supporting seniors and supporting the toll road.
You've got to come out and say no to the toll road in every shape or form through South County.
Who are the board members of the OCT? Aren't they appointed politicians? Aren't they like supervisors?
There's representatives from certain cities. Another gentleman who was on the radio show, a friend of mine, Jose Moreno, is a representative from Anaheim. Mm-hmm. There are representatives from every city. Tony Beal is a representative from Rancho.
How many are there? Like 18 on their board? It's a pretty big board.
It's a huge board.
Yeah. So that's what, if you could turn the board members, then they could stop it. And short of that, then you've got to turn all the politicians and show them that they'll pay a price for this. Because I don't.
I think all of that you're talking about.
And
right
why
there,
did the environmental group settle then? Why did they settle? Because that was a dead door.
That is the biggest question, and that is probably the thing that will go down in history as the biggest sellout of environmental groups with the city of San Clemente. I mean, they literally right now are looked at as pariahs, to be honest.
Because they had it stopped. Yes. I mean, it was dead in its tracks. The whole thing was done. It was over.
And I'm maybe mistaking the understanding of the settlement, okay? But what I'm hearing is that you don't get a penny out of the $30 million until they run the alternative route.
I don't know. I never read the settlement.
Yes, because the money, the $30 million settlement, okay, is money for mitigation, okay?
Sure.
For environmental protection and mitigation after you start running your alternative route.
That's how you always settle lawsuits.
But listen to this. You got sued for 10 years, and then you settled the lawsuit, and the environmental groups claimed it as a victory because it stopped the thing running from San Mateo, right?
Right.
But you didn't get one red cent until they actually start building concrete?
Well, because they don't want to pay until
That's not a victory. You didn't stop anything. You just kicked the can down the road. And you didn't even get paid for it until the can gets started.
Who were the environmental groups in that lawsuit?
Sierra Club, Surf Rider. Yeah. There's a bunch of other ones.
And they all stopped it because it was going through the San Mateo Creek or
watershed
and all
that. Right. Yeah. And it was running parallel to the watershed. Had it gone across the head of it and down Pendleton, I don't think there would have been the push. Right? But it was running parallel to the watershed. And why was it running parallel to our shed? The argument if you're cynical, is that because then I could build down that hillside.
Why didn't you get somebody from Surf Rider in here, or one of those?
They cannot talk about it. They cannot contest it. They cannot come out in any shape or form. That was part of the settlement. But again, if you're going to settle,
gag order.
If you're going to settle, pretty much a gag order. If you're going to settle, if you're going to buy me my silence, then at least give me some money. But to buy my silence and not even give me money until you start building concrete and get your way, how is that even a smart thing?
Well, unless they think the alternative will go somewhere far away, which won't impact their main thing was
There is no misunderstanding where it was going. The route on Pico has been on the maps as an alternate. In fact, in 2006, when they were trying to get it through San Mateo, the TCA itself showed the route on Pico in bad light. Okay, including renderings.
Well,
which
they used
we
to
have.
Show 20 or 30 routes. I've seen plans with all sorts of routes.
Right, and the numbers used to change like bingo. Like, oh, it's not this card now, it's this card. But basically, when they were trying to run it through San Mateo, they had an alternative route already identified, and it showed it in a bad light. So when you environmental groups settled with them to stop it going through San Mateo, it already said on their paperwork where they're going to put it. So you sold out the city of San Clemente and the citizens of San Clemente by saying, we're not going to run it through this. But you know what? That's above our pay grade when it comes to inside the community.
Can I ask you a hard question? I don't want you to get mad at me now. But when it was going to go...
Sorry, this is very impassioned because that's where I live. That's where my nephews live. That's where my parents live. This is
when it was
an esoterical
go
exercise.
Through the San Mateo watershed, which was not where houses are, right? That's why it was going to go there, because they didn't have to upset any homeowners or fewer homeowners. And now that that's out, they got to go back through neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Were you guys mad when it was going to go through the San Mateo
Absolutely.
Watershed?
Absolutely. I fought it against the San Mateo watershed. That was a stupid decision to run it through a pristine watershed in the state of California when we don't have – and through a canyon, basically, all right, with all other aspects of it. Cristinitas, the first baptismal area, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I was against it then. I'm against it now.
Okay.
That doesn't change.
We've extended the time here. We've gone over here.
Okay.
The 15 minutes got up. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out if you guys have coherently figured out where the best line you're getting everybody mad and you're going to go yell at the politicians and get them to turn, and hopefully the politicians will stop this. Short of that, is there any other plan to turn the board members, to file lawsuits, to do other sorts of
things? It is being fought on every single level, including with what Boyd is proposing, which is basically to bring back to free roads.
Well, that would be radical. That would stop it again there, right, too, because they can't turn it into a free road.
There would be a part of the initiative who would say that the 241 extension would be blocked. And so without any downside to any other strategies that are being put forth, you know, by the people in San Clemente or...
Here's
the thing, okay?
Right.
When you fight a fight like this, you don't fight it with a sole organized entity.
No.
Okay? You don't go after it with a big target that you circle and put everybody in the same basket. You go after this thing on every flank, every front. You dig at it. You pester it. You get underneath and burr underneath its saddle. And you keep after it until an organization...
Very well said, yeah.
Until an organization that basically has... To be fair to the TCA, an organization that's fighting for its corporate existence, okay? Because what happens with this, and this is not a rare thing or unique thing to the TCA, is you form an entity to solve a problem. We need to build roads. We can't afford the state to build roads. So you form an entity and a vehicle to do that. Okay?
And that wasn't Measure MTEC.
But here's what happens. Right. And for everybody who argues about, you know, pensions and existing bureaucracies and stuff like that, here's another one for you. The TCA is an existing bureaucracy who has outlived its purpose. And what you have now is you have people that basically are bought into it to such a point that now sustaining their position and existence overshadows the purpose of them being around.
I just got a press release from the Orange County Transportation Authority. They just passed their new budget. I'm going to try and find the press release. If I'm not mistaken, it was for $1.something billion.
Yeah, they fast-tracked it.
But at the last year, it passed unanimously with, I think Sean Nelson was not in attendance, and somebody else abstained. And so everybody else voted for this budget. And they claim in the press release there wasn't one single protest about the budget. Why didn't you guys go protest the budget? Because the budget must include payment for the toll road, I would think.
The OCTA is not on the target, by the way. It's not just the TCA, it's also the OCTA that's on everybody's radar screen. And I'll just, before I get off the TCA for a minute, the toll road is basically a private company. Do we agree? Is that pretty much? Board members.
It's some kind of weird public-private
company.
Yeah, right.
So why should
it's not a for-profit
company. So why should a private company have eminent domain power?
Because it's not a for-profit company. It's a public-private partnership.
So I have a nonprofit in San Clemente. Does that mean I have eminent domain power?
No. If you were a public-private partnership, that's it. I don't really understand technically what that means, but it has some public component to it.
Okay,
and some
so the Beaches, Parks, and Rec Foundation, Friends of Beaches, Parks, and Rec Foundation, which basically is a partnership between the city and a nonprofit. Are you telling me they have eminent domain power?
Now you're asking me to drill down and give you. You're going to name
my
me
point. My point. My point.
Somehow
is,
they do it because of their public component. Yes.
First and foremost, the plan being proposed is stupid and does not solve what it says it's supposed to solve. Okay. And anybody who's smart and they're lining up, regardless of political affiliation, and coming out against it. Okay. Anybody who is blind and tone-deaf to what's going on in South County, I am here to tell you there will be a political fallout price to pay in 2018. You heard it here. You will hear it here every time we talk about this topic. If you don't believe me, go spend a little time. Okay? This is not getting smaller. This is getting much bigger, and you're getting more and more notable names that are attached to it. And everybody who's smart running next year is going to use this as a platform to basically get the recognition they need to basically win. So with that being said, I appreciate you, Boyd, being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely went over.
Can I give a 30-second plug?
Yes,
yeah,
please.
For more information on the university, you can go to www.ucoca.org. For more information on Boyd Roberts for Congress, just go to www.boydrobertsforcongress.com. I do not have a website for the toll roads. I do have a Facebook page, Making the Toll Roads Free. And if anybody, it's also a call to action, if somebody wants to do a website,
Well, you need volunteers.
You have a committee in place for that, right?
Yeah, I've already taken out the committee name. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay. So maybe a call for involvement by some people. I mean, I think more information you put out, the better, because it's time is of the essence on this one.
Since we've gone so far over, let me ask you just two more real quick questions here. In the political fight here, you're actually going to run for Congress against a very well-entrenched Republican, Dana Rohrabacher, who, along with Mimi Walters and a few others, has been targeted by the National Democratic Committee as people who are what's the correct way of saying this? They're vulnerable because they were elected in areas that did not vote for Trump, right? That did not vote Republican in the presidential primary. I know there's quite a number of candidates declaring to run against Mimi, and we've talked to one of them. Are there many candidates running for the Democratic nomination against Dana Rohrabacher?
There's
because in the past nobody would run against him.
Yeah, there's a few. Rohrabacher, in my view, is particularly vulnerable because he has this peculiar association with Russia.
Yeah, very.
And I could be wrong, but I think Russia is going to be an election issue going into November 2018.
Did you hear that? And it was, again, this is one of the many things that have been leaked, so it hasn't been confirmed, but it was in the New York Times, I believe, or Washington Post, and they did that bizarre conversation with Kevin McCarthy where he claims he was just kidding.
Right, right.
But he's quoted as saying in a House leadership meeting where they're talking about
members. Oh, Rohrabacher's totally on the take. He is a Russian agent, in my opinion.
Okay, let me just say
McCarthy said something kiddingly like, well, you can always count on him to support the Russians. Or, I forgot the quote.
No, all you have to do is go just type into your Google search engine Rohrabacher and RT.com. Okay, so he's on all these
Russian Times television
Russian station. Television, Russia Today. Russia Today. So he has all these appearances on Russia Today, and he's very comfortable. He's obviously not in any hurry. He's getting paid.
Like Flynn got paid when he made an appearance.
So I'm gonna take advantage of this as an independent.
Yes, okay?
And I'm gonna say the following: anybody on either side of the political divide. New or existing, you know, incumbent that wants to come and talk about the toll road, they can come and talk about the toll road on the Rad Life.
So Rohrabacher.
I have one requirement.
You got to be against it.
You got to come out before you get on the air with me to talk about this. You got to put out a public statement that basically says that you are against a 241 extension through South County. I'm not even going to push for the dissolution of the toll road, even though I believe it's an entity whose time has come and gone, and it has outlived its purpose. Plus, the fee structure is ridiculously economically discriminatory. Okay? And if you don't believe me, ask the people in Corona Del Mar that are paying $20 during... It's like a friggin' stock market. Oh, look, there's high demand. $20 every way.
Well, because they're just trying to get it to pay for itself.
That's called skinning people, taking them for a ride.
A ride.
Okay. And on that note, that invitation is out there. You got to come out and say...
I'd like to take you up on that invitation.
You got it. Right. Anytime. Thanks, everybody, and thanks for letting us go over. Hopefully, it was informative.
It was. All right. Give me your contact while I'm getting you.
If anybody is interested, yeah, I just invite everybody, but didn't tell them how to get hold of me. So you can email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, @gmail.com. You can actually call me on my cell phone, but don't abuse it, otherwise I'll block you. 949-212-8299.
What happened to egalitarian? Anybody can do it.
You know what? I have a Facebook page, and it has 3,000 people from San Clemente, and I do not pretend to be anything other than the only admin. And if you step out of lines based on the codes listed, you get blocked. Okay, we all have very finite amount of time, and I've said this many, many years. I may have not been born in Missouri, but ideologically, I am from Missouri. So do not snow me, show me.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.